This is CBS News on the Hour, sponsored by Staples.
I'm Allison Keyes in Washington. Morocco declares 3 days of national mourning over that massive earthquake that's killed more than 1,000 people. Flags are being flown at half-mast. Richard Hamilton is with BBC Africa.
Many hundreds of people slept outside in the main square, the Jemaa el-Fana, which means Assembly of the Dead. But the worst place was the Atlas Mountains further south. People have been pulled from the rubble, but they say without medical help, they're simply dying.
There's a tall agenda at the G20 summit in India, including the influence of China and the Russian war in Ukraine. CBS's Ed O'Keefe is there with President Biden.
The president's in the midst of a packed day of meetings that are focused on climate change, economic development, and infrastructure across the developing world. The leaders of the world's 20 largest economies are focused primarily on economic issues, not security issues, but we got word just a little while ago from the Indian Prime Minister that a joint statement from the group will make mention of concerns with the war in Ukraine, something President Biden has been eager to point out on this trip.
Law enforcement in Pennsylvania say there have been more sightings of that escaped murderer who's been on the lam for more than a week. KYW reporter Hadass Kuznets.
Kennett Square resident Ann Smithyman has noticed a significant police presence here in Kennett Square, especially around Longwood Gardens.
Police are really, you know, surrounding the area where they think he is.
This is part of the search area in which there were two confirmed sightings of fugitive Danilo Cavalcante on Friday, and Smithyman says she's frustrated.
We just don't understand how he's staying away from being found.
But State Police Lieutenant Colonel George Bivens says he's confident Cavalcante will be caught sooner or later.
We have been taking a very methodical approach to this whole search. One of these tactics that we're using will ultimately be successful.
Former White House Chief of Staff Mark Meadows has failed in his bid to move his Georgia election interference case from state to federal court. He and former President Trump, along with 17 others, have been indicted for trying to overturn the 2020 presidential election there. CBS's Christina Ruffini.
The fact that the judge pretty quickly dismissed Meadows' request isn't a good sign for the other defendants, including the former president, who are expected to ask for the same thing. The judge said because Meadows' behavior was so far outside the scope of his official's duties, it doesn't really meet the very low threshold for a change.
The Biden administration is spending $26 million on aviation safety, working to stop close calls around airports. The White House is moving toward requiring that all planes have technology to keep them from nearly running into each other on the ground or in the air. There's been a spate of near misses. This is CBS News.
Staples stores provide innovative products and services for small business, remote workers and learners, even teachers and parents. Explore more at your local Staples store.
Civic Media radio stations, providing your news, conversations, and fun you won't find anywhere else.
For Civic Media News, I'm Terry Bell. A group of U.S. House Republicans wants $4 billion in cuts to the Environmental Protection Agency in exchange for their votes against a government shutdown later this month. Environmentalists say that would jeopardize efforts to eliminate PFAS pollution. Mark Richardson reports.
Betsy Sutherland, a former EPA staffer who worked on water issues, says this isn't the time to play politics with cleaning up the environment.
Budget cuts will have real consequences for EPA's ability to protect human health and the environment, not just from PFAS, but from every environmental threat our country is facing.
These chemicals are among the most persistent toxic compounds in existence, contaminating everything from drinking water to food, packaging, and personal care products, and they never break down in the environment. Neighboring Michigan has among the highest rates in the country. A bill in the House Appropriations Committee, which funds the EPA, proposes cutting the agency's budget by more than one-third in fiscal year 2024. Sutherland says if the measure is approved, EPA funding would plummet to levels unseen in 3 decades.
The cuts are incredibly short-sighted. 2 weeks ago, EPA released PFAS monitoring data for 2,000 drinking water systems that show multiple PFAS chemicals are in the drinking water of over 26 million people.
John Reeder with the Environmental Working Group says most PFAS emanate from the air emissions of industrial plants. He says the group's federal PFAS report card found these chemicals in all 50 states, but industrial regions like the upper Midwest had the most sites.
We hope that Congress is listening. Budget cuts for EPA as well as DOD's cleanup program have real consequences and would likely delay protection for millions of people exposed to PFAS.
I'm Mark Richardson. Find our 8 trust indicators at publicnewsservice.org.
And this is Civic Media News. I'm Terry Bell.
Experience Nightlight, September 8th and 9th from 5 until 10:30 p.m. Presented by Joy Engine. The dazzling spectacle is an immersive 4D light festival taking place in Milwaukee's historic Mitchell Street neighborhood. Digital animations, dance, music, art, and fashion combine to create a visual, family-friendly sensory experience outside of 710 West Historic Mitchell Street, home of Mitchell Street Arts. The event is family-friendly and free to the public. Don't miss this iconic event. Nightlight, where art comes to life. Information at joyengine.org.
Uh-oh, did a rock hit your windshield from that semi? Don't worry, Autoglass Now offers fast, reliable, and convenient service. For a limited time only, Autoglass Now is offering 50% off windshield replacement. Call your local Autoglass Now today for full details.
It's never personal, only politics. The Devil's Advocates Radio Show with Dom and Crute. Weekdays from 4 until 6 on your local Civic Media radio station and on the Civic Media app.
Hi, this is Lou Ann Bird, and you're listening to Bird on a Wire, where we are having conversations about hope, civility, and action. Thank you for listening on the Civic Media Network.
Hi there, I'm Lou Ann Bird from Bird on a Wire, your host for the Bird on a Wire podcast series. Also co-hosted by Civic Media. And thanks to all the folks at Civic Media who make this happen. We are having conversations on hope, civility, and action. And today I am so excited to introduce someone who has been very much a public servant in our area, Quinn Brunette, who serves on the Whitnall School Board. And we're going to talk about all things school board and education today.
All right.
So Quinn, start with, tell us a little bit about yourself.
So I just retired about a year ago. My wife and I owned a painting contracting business for 22 years, employed about 15 regular full-time painters throughout that time. And we were fortunate enough to find someone that was willing to buy it, and we sold it. And we're just starting to enjoy retirement. We have 2 daughters. Both of them went to the Whitnall School District's different schools, elementary, middle, and high school. My oldest daughter, Ashley, is now a teacher, a high school math teacher at Dopke High School in the West Dallas, West Milwaukee School District. And my youngest daughter just graduated from Madison this past spring, lived in Madison all summer so she could live her last days and enjoy herself, and had a nanny and job all summer. And she moved back after her lease was up, and just got a job in her profession, and very excited for her. She had a couple offers, and she took one that's going to fit her the most, and she'll be starting after the holiday.
Very good. So I met Quinn when I moved here, and there was an opening on the school board, and I went in to talk to the superintendent about, I was new, I knew the superintendent, I went in to talk to him about some stuff, and he said, there's an opening on the school board, and today's the deadline, and why don't you get on the school board. I said, are you kidding? I'm going shopping. I was like, retirement mode. It wasn't on my radar. But anyway, then he told me how simple it was to get on the board. And I said, yes. And lo and behold, there's Quinn Brunette on the school board. And that's how I met you.
Sure.
So tell us about that. What made you run for the school board?
So as I said in the very first candidate form, I am not a book smart guy. I am a street smart guy. I started my business from scratch. I barely made it through high school. I went to Pius High School. I'm very grateful that teachers and my mom had died in my sophomore year. So my dad had his hands full with what's going on, and I kind of got wayward. But the teachers at Pius carried me through, and I graduated. And college just wasn't in the picture for me. I was not a school guy. So the Whitnall School District was asking for volunteers to put on their 50th anniversary. They were going to have a block party and a party. And so I volunteered and got involved and was on a couple committees. And on the day of the party, one of the principals and a then school board president came up to me and said, we think you'd make a good candidate. Would you like to run? And I said, a candidate for what? And he said, school board. And I said, just the same thing. I said to him, I said, I'm not, you know, this deep thinker. I'm not the smart guy. He said, we don't need that. We have plenty of those. And a board needs a good makeup of different people, right? I didn't realize it. I just thought all the people that were on the school board were deep thinkers and very studious and very smart and had good educations. And while we do have those, you do need a mix. And I thought about it and I talked to my wife. And at that time, I was on the Whitnall Youth Baseball Committee as well. And she said, well, you got to give up one. You want to run for that? You got to give up that. So I chose the one to run, and we had three spots open, and we had six candidates, and I came in fourth. I came in really, I was only 200 votes off of third place, and three established candidates, so I felt pretty good about it. I ran the next year, and I got on, and that was, and this is my 12th year of being on the school board, so that's what got me on there, and I think I'd bring a unique opinion, view, because of my background and being a business owner and knowing how to handle people, but not necessarily being the brainiac of the group. And as I said before, a board of this nature needs smart people, needs retired people, needs people in the community, needs people, moms and dads. You will be best served if it's a wide variety of people on the board.
I might argue with you about the smart thing. I think you're plenty smart. Okay, so, but what I also know about Quinn is he's very passionate, very honest, and dedicated, being on as long as you have been. So tell us a little bit about what do you have to do to run for school board at Whitnall? It's not the same everywhere, by the way.
Really, I truly believe that it's changed recently, but you got to get signs up. I mean, there's very little. Up until recently, there's very little. It was all about signage. You know, you can be popular with parents or within your subdivision or your neighborhood or whatever it may be, but you got to remember that older people vote. They vote day in and day out, every election. And how do you reach them? You can knock on doors. I believe you did that. I never knocked on a door. It just wasn't my style. But I got banners up and posters up and I got involved. And people knew me from being involved from the Whitnall Youth Baseball to the block party, and then so much more thereafter that I got involved outside of the boardroom.
Well, they don't always vote for you just because they know you. They must like you too.
Well, maybe, you know, and I will say this, women do well in the Whitnall Dual School District for whatever reason. And also, I mean, these are things that are true. Maybe not necessarily get the right person, but the order on the ballot.
Oh, yeah. There's all kinds of little things.
Right.
But do you have to get signatures? I mean, how hard is it to get on the ballot?
No signatures.
What do you have to do?
You just fill out a form, a nonpartisan election form and get it certified, and you're on.
So in
other, you're not on the board, you're in the election.
You're on the ballot. And other communities, you might want to check with your local clerk if you're considering running, or with your superintendent, because there are different, in some districts you do have to get signatures. There's different, it depends on the size of your district. So just letting you know how it's not hard to get on in some areas.
Nope.
Did you have a particular issue you ran on?
So when talking to this board president and principal that approached me and asked me, there was a block of four people that had control. And they had the four votes, and they wanted to mix it up. They thought that it was pretty stale, and they needed somebody in there to mix it up. Exactly what they told me.
That's what they told you.
That's exactly what they told me.
So were you able to accomplish, once you got on, what you thought needed to change? Because I'm guessing that was why you weren't satisfied with things. You wanted things changed. What was it, and were you able to accomplish that? by being at the table?
Well, at my very first meeting, and I'm sure it's on tape somewhere, I was very active in the meeting, and one of the gentlemen was bullying a female member, and I stepped in and called him on it. And I think that changed the tone right there.
Wow. For better? You were able to get...
Yes, I think it's stopped. I mean, I really believe it stopped after that. It just had to be presented and presented in public. Mm-hmm. And I wasn't looking, and it just naturally said, that's wrong. You can't just say that to her.
Okay. And then it got better.
It got better.
So we start
but
with
I
civility.
Also say, yes, civility, exactly.
You brought civility to the board.
They also got off the board shortly thereafter, so.
Okay.
But it went on for a good year. Those gentlemen were on the board, and but I just by stepping up and saying that, I never thought of it that way, but it was. It's about civility, yes.
It was about civility. I was going to ask you that about what is it like being on the school board. Is it always civil? Have you seen that ebb and flow over the 12 years you're on?
It is not always civil, and I can say that I've always haven't been civil. You know, they say attack the problem, not the person.
Yeah.
And that's a good motto.
Hard to do when you're at a meeting. And it's very personal.
And the back and forth is going.
Yep.
Yes, it is. If you can stop yourself and remember that, it'll do your best. But be honest, it's not always that way.
It's not. So back to your ability to accomplish. So the very first meeting, you set a new tone. What else have you seen change? What have you been able to get done? If a person is at the school board table, you do have some power, right? And how do you use that power? What has happened at Whitnall in 12 years?
So you only have power when you're in session. Outside of session, you have no power at all. You cannot tell anybody to do anything. Your power lies within a group of seven.
Okay.
And only when you're in session and only when there's a quorum. If you don't have those two, you have no power. Whether it's a committee meeting, you have no power. It has to come back in session in quorum.
However, but you're at the table, and as part of that power structure, you've been able to make changes. Because like you said, it was like 3-4 before, and then mm-hmm. you get on the board and it tipped the balance to another way. What did you do while you were on the board?
So I will say one of the biggest things that and it really came to fore because we just tour our state forest. We have a state forest on grounds. It's a spectacular area. And one of the last things that one of the board members that was going off the board had his son come in front of the board. And we didn't have any plans for this forest at the time. It was just basically a jungle. And I'll be honest, kids probably went over there and smoked pot and drank over there and did whatever. Those are the rumors. His son wanted to make it a disc golf course.
Frisbee disc.
Disc, yep. And I was strongly against it. And that at that time, we got 4 votes not to do it. We got 3 votes, 4 votes, because... this gentleman abstained from voting because it was his son that brought the proposal in front of us. And to see the force now, if we acted on it and made this a disc, go take a walk through there. It is not only beautiful, it is a great learning center for all of our kids. All of our kids and teachers love to go get it. It's our teachers and staff that make this thing work. They've cleared it out. They've planted the city forester is involved with it. So that's one thing that just really stands out, that my vote really mattered.
Full disclosure, I was on the board at that time. I was one of the yes votes. Mm-hmm. And I walk my dogs in that forest, and I can't get over how beautiful it is. And it feels so good to me that I stepped up when no one else would to get on that school board.
Yep.
And to also vote for that. They've gotten a lot of grant money to make that school force, and those teachers, I see them in the summer
they're donating their time and keeping it clean, they're in their element.
It's all for the kids
and that's what disposition should be about. It's all about the kids.
But when you started 12 years ago, the facilities also had some needs, and as part of that, you're a voice, you're at the table, you get to be a part of that. And when I got on the board, they were talking about all these older facilities, but no one had really done anything about it, right?
Correct.
And why is that? Why didn't it get done sooner?
We had a incompetent superintendent.
Okay. Okay. So then what did, let's see. Also, though, the board still has power. Was the climate or culture on the board one of let's move this district forward at that time? Let's do something about these facilities. I know they've been studying them.
So these four members that had the control of the board, that's when they got off. And I remember the last things they said to us, and we were right in the middle of planning it, the referendum. They said, do something different. Go outside the box. And I know what he meant. They meant sell HCE, sell that, use that, and combine it into one campus. That's what their thoughts were.
There was some misinformation out there, too, that the board was ever thinking about closing one of its schools. So we ended up going to referendum the first time, and then the people, the school board members that got off, along with a few other community members, really campaigned heavily against the referendum.
No vote.
But I had a lot of experience because I had been a school board consultant and had served in another community. So I, going out there and getting a no vote still moves the district forward because it puts the issues out there. It tells people this is what's going on in our schools. And even though a few of those people campaigned against it, second time around, we got one of those people on the committee to take a look at, well, if you don't want this particular thing, there's still issues, maintenance issues, deferred maintenance, because there have been caps. There's caps on the budget. It isn't like a local school board, even though you all have some power. It's pretty much controlled at the state level in terms of how much money you're going to get. So if you're going to do some large capital projects, that is not affordable out of your operating budget. You have to go to the voters, correct?
You just can't do it.
Okay, so then tell us what happened the second time around.
So again, we had, in between there, we got a new superintendent. And that made the world of it. The current superintendent put her heart and soul into it. Went to the communities, went to the Lions Club, went to the Chamber of Commerce's, got involved, got people knowing, got brought people into their facilities. We had a citizens advisory committee,
mm-hmm.
also, and get the awareness that these facilities are 50 to 60 years old, and some are original, and you can't do it out of your fund 10, your ballot, your budget. But more importantly, she got involved. She got people to know what's going on, and she put her heart and soul into it. And it passed easily.
I want to back up a little bit and talk about the former superintendent met the needs of that current board. So just didn't get that direction that the new board wanted to go in. That was part of it. This is the new board now, and we need to do more changes. So changing the superintendent is what school boards can do.
No doubt.
They have a lot of power, but you also have the power to give direction and represent the community when you're at that table.
Yep.
So you got to kind of check the pulse of the community and bring those voices, like you said, together, Quinn. That wasn't what I observed when I got on the board either. It was very hard to pull people together around a common vision, like this is the direction we should go in.
Yep.
And the community. So how did you see that happen? Because the second referendum passed. So tell us about that.
Well,
so you get a new superintendent, and then what else?
And then we did a survey of the people, and we pretty much stayed with the top 10 things that they said were important. And it's unfortunate because the next big, it's a big tick, the pool. Our pool is done. It's going to either have to be paved over or replaced. But the community was not was against it,
right?
And that was a separate, on the previous referendum, that was a separate
question.
We didn't even,
and that went down.
So we didn't broach it, even knowing full known that this is not the pool and locker rooms were in total disarray. we knew we wouldn't get the support from the community.
On the second time around.
Yes. So we went with strictly the things that we got support with.
And then they passed. I will mention one thing that was part of that. Quinn mentioned we all bring something to the table and you need a diversity of views. When I got on the board, most of you know I have a husband in a wheelchair, and I noticed some things that weren't quite right in the district pertaining to disabilities. And also we had a parent come to the board and say, these bathrooms don't work right for kids in one of our schools. And I had to lay my son down on the ground to change him. And when that became a part of my awareness, I brought that to the board and said, hey, we got to do something about this. And we ended up getting an architect or somebody, an expert, to do an analysis of the district. And so as we were planning for the second referendum, we now had good survey data from the community, which Whitnall still does. Mm-hmm. We had an advisory committee that was part of the process. They were now aware of the ADA issues, right?
Yep.
And you had a full board that was supporting this referendum. So all these pieces were in place to move forward. And on the night of the vote, I know I had to get off the board at that time because my husband had had a stroke. So life was complicated, right? But the board did such a good job of planning for this particular referendum. And then I get a call from one of the other school board members, Nancy, my friend, said, hey, Lou, she says, we decided, I asked the board to put all the ADA on the referendum at all the schools, because those are issues that are hard to get done, again, mm-hmm. in the operating budget. And she says to me, she sent me a text, and the board agreed. So that was on this referendum. So if you're thinking about something you care about and you want to create change and you work with your colleagues, you can make those changes.
You can.
And so you also have been a part of that. The district is in a much better place, I would say, than it was when you started. And you had to take us through COVID. So how does that work? How do you get... Yeah, tell us a little bit about what that was like when you were on the school board.
So March 2020 happened, and you know it hit, and we had to pivot fast. And you have to have good leadership in place with communication skills. And what our administration advised was to don't go fast. Let's just take it easy. And it proved out to be extremely the correct way to go. Some other districts jumped in right away and did some things.
Like?
I truly can't remember now.
Like closing schools and...
Yeah, no. Everybody shut down.
Everybody
March 20, everybody shut down.
Okay. We're,
then that's a different story. August of 2021. No, August
of 2020.
August of 2020.
Oh, when you went back to school.
But right then...
Yeah,
I can't remember some things, but they played out. It played out. We were a little behind, and people were starting to get a little antsy. But it was the right thing because no one knew nothing, right?
Really, we didn't at that time. Right. And I remember contacting the board because I was unhappy because there wasn't going to be. I think masks eventually became optional for the Whitnall.
That's further on.
Further on, but when even
March,
early on.
No, March 2020, everything shut down.
But you stayed closed.
No, we stayed closed. That was
March. In August, you were open.
Then we came open, yes. But,
they stayed
you know, we
open.
Had, you know, one of the things that we did, which was just spectacular, was for the, you know, the kids that graduated that year.
Oh, yeah.
We had all stayed out there in their cars. There was a parade. They came around, came in front of us, got their picture taken, got out with their family, got on a stage, got their picture taken, got their diploma. It was there for them. So we got so many kudos for that because those kids were getting cheated, you know, of this graduation, the most important thing in their life at that point. And we did a good job of it.
Bird on a Wire podcast will be right back after this. To listen to this and more uninterrupted, listen on the Civic Media app, available on Apple and Android.
keeping Southeast Wisconsin informed, engaged, and entertained. This is The Shaw, 540 AM and 101.1 FM, WAUK.
CBS News Brief. Morocco has declared 3 days of mourning as more than 1,300 people are killed in a massive earthquake. Richard Hamilton is with BBC Africa.
A massive search and rescue operation is underway, and the Moroccan authorities are trying to get food and supplies to people. Marrakesh, which is a UNESCO World Heritage Site, has been very badly damaged.
President Biden and world leaders at the G20 summit have a lot on their plates.
Building sustainable, resilient infrastructure, making quality infrastructure investments, and creating a better future.
New sightings now of convicted killer Danilo Cavalcante, who escaped from jail 10 days ago in Pennsylvania. CBS's Jeff Glore.
Authorities are warning people living nearby to secure their sheds and garages. Cavalcante was sentenced to life for fatally stabbing his ex-girlfriend in front of her children.
Many people in the area say they're frightened. CBS News Brief. I'm Allison Keyes.
With news on WAUK The Shaw, I'm Stuart J. Waddles. Two Waukesha County jail workers are free on signature bonds. Deborah Link and Joanna Grace were in court this week, facing charges related to an inmate's death. Both are charged with abuse of residents of penal facilities. The inmate, Randy Glenn Jr., died in his jail cell. An autopsy revealed 5 small bags containing 10 grams of cocaine were found in his stomach. Prosecutors allege that Link, a jail nurse, was aware of the situation but didn't take adequate action, and Grace, a lieutenant, failed to document medical concerns during her shift. There's a little gig today at the site of the big gig. The Summerfest grounds, starting today, will host family and pet-friendly temporary beer gardens. Parking is free, there will be live music, and a diverse menu of beer and snacks. With news on WAUK The Shaw, I'm Stuart J. Waddles.
Hi, I'm Emily from Weikert Realtors Lake Point in Madison. Homeownership is a big deal, and so is taking the leap into the buying or selling of any property. The Weikert team gets that, and our job is to help you navigate the sales process and provide smooth sailing. You have questions? We have answers. You have worries? We have solutions. Let us open the door to your future home. Weikert Realtors Lake Point, 608-721-8002, 2045 Atwood Avenue. Find more info at weikert-lakepoint.com.
Experience Nightlight, September 8th and 9th from 5 until 10:30 p.m. Presented by Joy Engine. The dazzling spectacle is an immersive 4D light festival taking place in Milwaukee's historic Mitchell Street neighborhood. Digital animations, dance, music, art, and fashion combine to create a visual, family-friendly sensory experience outside of 710 West Historic Mitchell Street, home of Mitchell Street Arts. The event is family-friendly and free to the public. Don't miss this iconic event. Nightlight, where art comes to life. Information at joyengine.org.
Think you'd like working with us at Civic Media? We're having fun and moving fast to preserve hometown radio across Wisconsin. If you have the right skills to join our team, let's talk. Civic Media is a proud equal opportunity employer committed to diversity and inclusion, along with the growth and development of all current and future employees. If you're interested or are part of an organization who wants to know more, go to our website, civicmedia.us. And click on the Careers tab. Fear you may be missing out? We're always streaming on TuneIn and the Civic Media app. Enjoy listening live or catch up by finding the podcast at civicmedia.us or wherever you enjoy listening to your podcasts.
Hi. This is Luann Bird, and you're listening to Bird on a Wire, where we are having conversations about hope, civility, and action. Thank you for listening on the Civic Media Network.
So then going into August, so August of 2020, I think it was August 12th, the meeting that we had that we were going to decide, might have been even the 28th, it was right there. What we were going to do for the new year, and the house is full. And it's half of the house is masked people, the other half is non-masked people. And you know, I made the comment right there in front of everybody that while I appreciate everybody being here, I wish you would show up when we have such mundane things as student achievement and financials and facilities. It didn't go over well with some people, but some people said, you're right, you know, and it seems as though we operated in virtual anonymity at most times. There's no one in the room other than us and the administrators. There's people mm-hmm. watching on TV or on the feed, but these hot button issues will bring people in, right? So then we decided to go mask optional first semester, and you could opt out and have a virtual, but you had if you opted out and went virtual, you had to go for the whole semester. Mm-hmm. And at the second semester, then we did the same thing. And then after that, it was back to being optional. So we made it through
and
our kids in school. And, you know, we had one period, we had 1 2-week period that we had a shutdown, go all virtual with the middle school and high school. It was mostly because the government said you could, if you were an educator, you could take off because if your mom or your parent or a loved one was affected by COVID. So it was really the staff. We couldn't staff it properly. And it was mostly the staff's family that they used this. The government allowed that. And so we had to go virtual for about 2 weeks. And that was really the longest. We had here or there, you know, like one class had to be shut down. But it really went uninterrupted thereafter. And it was optional. And the kids were back in school. Not everybody was happy. No, you're not going to please everybody. That's just the way it is. There's 2,400 students and probably 1,200 families, you know, that it affects. And you're not in, some are this side, some are that side, some are maybe in the middle. But we gave people options and we made it through.
One thing cool about being on the school board is you know people. And I think you're right about the board as a whole doesn't have any power. I mean, the board only has power when they're in open legal session. However, as an individual, become
session. Let's just say session.
Yeah.
Closed as well.
That's right. So but you get to know a lot of people. And what I liked about serving on the school board is even after I got off, we're friends or maybe not so close anymore, but maybe I have some disagreements with some board members, but I know who they are. They know who I am. And so my voice matters more. When you contact them, your voice matters because you've been there, you're known. I just think that's all helpful when it comes to taking action on the issues that you care about. And education is always going to be important to me. I don't have kids in the Whitnall School District. My kids are grown. Never did, but I care about education. I know how important it is to the community. So mm-hmm. jumping on the board is a great way to do that.
Yeah, I have friends and people that I've made that know that I'm on board and will email me from time to time, text me from time to time. I have one gentleman that is very, very involved with his taxes. So he texted me just a couple of days ago about, because Ailes Corners and Greenfield both got reassessments and what's that going to do to our taxes. And
yeah.
And so, yeah, there's
what'd you say to him?
What did I say?
It's true.
It is.
We have a huge increase in our evaluation.
Yeah. It is going to affect us, but I think it's going to be marginal. I really think it's going to be marginal.
Well, Whitnall is in a unique position. So I want to talk about that. But first, I want to talk about school board elections and the consequences of those. In around the country, there's a group called Moms for Liberty who's organized and going around and talking about things like banning books. They're talking about parental rights, making it sound like there aren't any, but there are. And also they talk about banning transgender kids from participating and just really some, I would say, maybe a bit radical thinking about education. And it's a little scary to me, the books that they're talking about. it's history. And also they talk about not teaching about race and being careful not to make someone feel guilty about what we did in the past. There's just a lot of weird stuff going on. So elections have consequences. Tell us about what you've seen over your 12 years of how elections have impacted your ability to get work done on the board.
So I think that COVID changed everything. As you alluded to, I think during COVID, parents got to see more. And I also think that the talking heads of TV, radio, all of them have made a concerted effort to go to the lower links, the lower positions in the elected officials and try and make a difference there. And the school boards have been targeted. You mentioned Moms for Liberty. There's a group called 1648 Project, I believe it's called. And 2 years ago, we had the Milwaukee County Republicans Party hosting get to know school board members. It was hosted right here in Hills Corners. Yeah. And then we had a candidate that ran this past year called me and asked me what he thought the Democratic Party was canvassing at the time, and they wanted to know if he wanted them to hand out his information as well. And so when you sign the election papers, right on top in bold lettering, nonpartisan position, I am against all that. I spoke out about, because we have a member that's Miles for Liberty, we have a member that's a 1648 Project, and one of the members, also two of the members, attended this Milwaukee County Republican Party get to know school board members social. And I said, whether it's a Democratic Party or Republican Party, it's wrong. Because what you can be whatever you want in your personal life, and that's fair. But you got to leave it there before you come into this room. Because if you allow those outside agencies to influence you, in my opinion, then it's not about the kids. It's about whatever they think is right. We have a state representative that wants to ban 50 words. He's not one of our state representatives in our district, and he wants to ban 50 words, you know, let alone books. So once you start letting that stuff in, it's not about the kids anymore. And doing what's right for the kids may not be right for whatever political affiliation or whatever it is out there. And I think it's wrong. I think it's terribly wrong. When I made that comment, I made it in live session. I got pushback by a bunch of emails. There was one or two that said, you're right. But most of them were, we want to know how our candidates believe, who they belong to, was the word they used. It's wrong. In my opinion, it's wrong. Mm-hmm. So the influence is there. I mean, we had one member say she read the new ELA. English language. We have a new curriculum, and she stayed right out. I found no CRT in it, critical race theory. You know, she's saying that to, I think, to talk to a certain segment of the community.
Of the community, okay. So what happened at Whitnall is very similar to what you did, correct? There are the school board, there's sort of a group, the school board is divided. And in the last election, we had how many? 3 seats open, yep. Correct? And of those 3 seats, there were, I'm trying to remember now, how many incumbents?
6 candidates.
There were
2.
2 incumbents. And it was...
No, 1. Jesse was the only one.
Jesse was the only one. Mm-hmm. Okay. And he was able to retain his seat.
He did. The two other members retired.
Longtime members. Yep.
And then we got two new ones.
Two new ones. And there was, so the board, there's also on the board currently a division, right? Before these two got elected, or these 3. There was some.
Yeah, of course.
And you even had a board member censured.
Correct.
The board censured a school board member for, tell us what you can about that in a civil way.
Well, so I really can't talk too much about it because most of it is closed door session, right?
Right. But in open session, you voted to.
Because of, I know you want to see it because I can't differentiate right now what was closed and what was open.
Right, right. So just say the board member was censured, and in doing that, then this board member couldn't hold any positions on the board, right? What does censure mean?
It's really just a slap on the hand. She can't hold any committees. She can't do any official acts as say, like graduation, for one. She had to ask if she could get an exception to do that. So any official acts by board, 4th of July, parade, can't do it.
So as a former school board consultant, I would say when a board has to do that, there's a problem. And the public doesn't look at one person and say they're a problem. They say that board is a problem. The whole board becomes accountable for that kind of stuff. So then this election happens, and now there's four people in power who replaced the incumbents that had positions. They took over all of those positions. Mm-hmm. The current board president has only been on a couple of years, right? He's in his first term?
No, he's in it. Yes.
Yes, he's in his first term. I think. Anyway.
No, he got reelected.
Okay, so he's.
The year before.
Anyway, the board, there's all new people running the board right now. And there was so much confusion at one of the board meetings that the board president thought that you could, by not approving the minutes, undo the work that the board did at the previous meeting. So we have to be careful who gets elected on our school boards. And I think you got to pay attention to what's going on there. Because right now, I got invited to serve on a committee. There's more needs, right? There's more
facility
needs in the district. And a superintendent who, I was on the board when we hired her, who I think has done a great job. However, there's people in the community that, you know, they get in disagreement with the direction the district has gone. And then some of it's around just we're so politically divided anymore that we can't even talk about some issues, and you become enemies instead of just people with differences of opinions. And it's really affecting even these local school boards. So I was invited to serve on a committee. And when our superintendent laid out what's going on fiscally in the district, I was so impressed. I have never seen where a district could pay down their debt early.
10 years early.
And by doing that, save the taxpayers millions of dollars.
$2.5 million.
And then also look at, now we can go back with those other facility needs, potentially. And I'm on a committee to do some of that advisory stuff to give it back to the board and leaning toward another referendum in 2024. I'm just telling you that is amazing fiscal responsibility that I'm seeing come out of this board and this administration.
Yep.
Are there issues? There's always issues. There's always disagreement. Are we doing enough for kids? I would argue that's the thing that everything should point back to. And that's hard to keep that focus when school boards want to micromanage sometimes and get into the details, you know, of what color paint or whatever. And, you know, that's not the board's job. The board's job is to set the direction and the vision, make sure that the people in the community understand what's going on, and then make sure that holding the superintendent accountable to that direction, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So what's happening now on all of that? Now that we got a new board and you and Kevin, wait, who else are incumbent?
Myself, Kevin, Jesse,
yeah.
Karen, Jason are new, and Rachel and Cassie are new.
There's two new ones.
Yep.
But the other two that are newer got control of the board and all the positions.
Yeah, one is a vice president and one is a clerk.
So the tone of the board has changed.
Yep.
And how are you feeling about that?
I don't feel good about it. However, I do believe the new members, all members, want student achievement. You spoke about how deep into the weeds do you want to go, and that's the difference I see right now. Is these new board members want to go really far in, and I don't think that's our place. We just had a, from a request from a board member, a really, really, really in-depth report where she requested, you know, dates and times of sessions, of training sessions. And is that what we want our administration doing? I don't.
Training sessions for teachers?
Yes, it was so, so in-depth that it's trust. It's about trust, and they don't trust them. That's what it is. That's as I see it. And there's, I don't think there's any reason not to, but that's what, that's where they're at. So these are two former teachers. And so they want to get down in the weeds, and other members, are saying, while we need the data and the report, we don't need this depth. It just happened at our last meeting. And I think that's really the difference, is the trust of the administration.
That's a big deal. And building a strong team of administrators and boards, it takes a lot of work. And just taking action is my thing, Quinn. And I did call, I have coffee with a board member that I thought might need some, you know, I would offer some advice about how to do that, you know, because I saw this particular board member as having some, you know, political power maybe. And if that's the case, then that's the person I want to talk to about how you can build your team, how you can listen to other board members. What is an effective way to evaluate your superintendent? What can you and can you not be doing? So that was a valuable conversation. I do what I can to try to help out boards because I do think, well, I just know it's our kids. Mm-hmm. It's our kids. And I do know that board members care about kids. So we get all in the weeds on this. I also called the board president and suggested he talk to the Association of School Boards about this idea of approving minutes. It takes, in my view, a couple of years to really get a grasp about what the role of the board is. And it is those bigger picture things. And that's where boards have power, by focusing on that direction and the kids and are they getting what they need in the school, not the operations side, which is the hiring of teachers and the training of teachers. That's what you delegate to your superintendent. So it's not like you're hands off, but it is you through the superintendent process is how you want to pull together as a board, give that superintendent the best direction of what 7 or 9, however many are on your board, are seeing about this person and what they're doing right. Often you build on a person's strengths instead of just focus on their things that need to change, but you want to also give that kind of coaching. So you're building a strong team of trust, and that is lacking on a lot of school boards right now.
Yep.
And the understanding of what it's going to take. But I do encourage you listeners out there to get in there, to get to know. And then even in, you know, I was talking to an instructional coach recently who was very concerned about where her kids go to school and what's happening there. And I said, the best way to find out what's happening is to have coffee with a school board member and pick their brain about it. Because parents don't always attend school board meetings. They can't take that kind of time, right, Quinn?
So, I mean, that's what they choose not to spend their time on.
Right. So they can call you up and say, Quinn, like I do all the time, right?
Mm-hmm.
What's happening on the school board? What happened last night? Why did you vote this way? You know, I'm worried about this.
And I get more emails or texts than calls. But my information's out there and I'm free to do this, but I do get those calls.
Have you made a difference being on that board?
You know, I think so. I'll say that, but it's the outside of that room that I've enjoyed the most being, because of the title I have, I've been invited to do other things and within the community. And that's what really is.
And around the state, you've served in some.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, Southwest. Committees. Yep.
Mm-hmm. Southwest.
Southeastern Wisconsin School Alliance. Yep.
So there's more to it than just what happens in the boardroom, and that can be a bit frustrating. But I can tell you, Quinn has made a huge difference. I can tell you that even in my short 4 years, I was able to bring a voice to the table that I think helped to make it better. It also got challenging when I was on, and you know, you just got to roll with it. But education is important. And
it is.
So my big question is, Quinn, you're up for re-election this year. Are you going to run again? You knew that was coming, right?
Am I going to run again? I would say as of right now, no. but I haven't given up. The animosity that's involved right now on a biweekly basis, because we meet every other Monday, basically, the second and fourth Monday of the month. I don't want to put my legs through. However, you know, there's this fighter in me that says, you can't let it stop. You got to back these people, you know, back the people that we know are doing good work. And so.
Yeah, it's about the kids. It's about the kids.
It is about the kids. And all the other crap, I wish it wasn't there. And it's come on since COVID, and it's there. And
so, you know what they say, if you're not part of the solution, you're part of the problem.
Could be.
So I have to admit, you know, my personal agenda here was to get you to say that you're going to run again, because I want you to. I think you're a great board member. And, you know, what I appreciate about you, Quinn, is you admitted you've done some things wrong. You haven't been as civil, but I also saw you admit that on camera and say, okay, let's work together. Let's get some things done. And I do know that individual board members' influence on the board changes over time. You know, you can be on that board and feel like no one's listening to you, right?
Mm-hmm.
You've been there. And then all of a sudden it kind of flips where what you say goes. And now it kind of flips back where what you say doesn't go. And so I'm happy to hear you're going to stay at that. And I used to tell school board members, if you don't walk out of a board meeting mad once in a while, you're probably not trying hard enough, because that's just the nature of the work. Boards should represent the community. So there should be a variety of perspectives, a variety of experience on the board. You don't have to know education to be a great board member. And Quinn, you've certainly proved that. It's not about that. It's not about having all the knowledge and experience and degrees. It's not that at all. It's about passion. It's about caring. And it's about building trust and wanting to serve your community.
Yep.
That's really what it's like. And I got a kick out of people that would get elected and they would be like, you know, attorneys and very professional people, and they'd get on a board and no one would listen to them. Like, that doesn't happen, does it? It does, doesn't it? It happens because you're new.
Could be.
And it takes time to build that strong governance team to make a difference in the community. So I hope that if you're listening to this, that you get a good sense of what it can be like on a school board, how important it is. And like Quinn said, it isn't all about what's at the table. It's about what you can do in your community when you're at the grocery store, or, you know, when people see that you're out there working for them, it makes a big difference. It's more than just what you do at the board.
From the kennel to the coop, whatever the season, Fleet Farm has everything to keep your animals happy and healthy. From training your pup to sit season, to mastering those retrieval skills season. From clipping your horse for competition season, to keeping the backyard birds well-fed season. And of course, loving your pets like family season. There's a reason people say, if Fleet Farm doesn't have it, you don't need it. Because we have it all. Fleet Farm. Built for real life.
Uh-oh, did a rock hit your windshield from that semi? Don't worry, Autoglass Now offers fast, reliable, and convenient service. For a limited time only, Autoglass Now is offering 50% off windshield replacement. Call your local Autoglass Now today for full details.
Experience Nightlight, September 8th and 9th from 5 until 10:30 p.m. Presented by Joy Engine. The dazzling spectacle is an immersive 4D light festival taking place in Milwaukee's historic Mitchell Street neighborhood. Digital animations, dance, music, art, and fashion combine to create a visual, family-friendly sensory experience outside of 710 West Historic Mitchell Street, home of Mitchell Street Arts. The event is family friendly and free to the public. Don't miss this iconic event, Nightlight, where art comes to life. Information at joyengine.com.